Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
Today's program was brought to you by Emmy Cheese, specialty cheese from Switzerland, made with heart and passion. For more information, visit emmyusa.com.
I'm one of HRN's interns, Nina Medvinskaya, with a preview of the next episode of Meat and Three, our weekly food news roundup. This week's topic, the marriage of food and danger. Sometimes, danger lurks in the food that we eat.
So instead of saying what is poisonous, I'd rather say what's not, because it's literally just the flesh and the fins.
Food poisoning doesn't just threaten our bodies, but it endangers our environment as well.
The emissions of JBS, combined with the other top five meat companies, exceed the annual emissions of Exxon, Shell, or BP.
For more, tune into this week's Meat and Three on Heritage Radio Network, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello, and welcome to Cutting the Curd. I'm Elena Santigade, and today I have a bona fide cheesemaking shiro on air with me. My guest today has won over 150 national and world cheese awards, is routinely referred to as the cheesemaker with the most energy in the land, and also strikes me personally as one of the nicest people around. I'm very excited to have Marika Penterman of Marika Gouda and Holland's Family Cheese from Thorpe, Wisconsin, on the show today. Hi, Marika.
Hi, Elena. Well, thank you for those flattering words. you can't see it, but I'm blushing. So,
it was a lot of fun. I mean, I've known of your cheeses as a Wisconsin person. I've known of your cheeses for a very long time, but it was especially fun to do research and read all of your accolades. I mean, it was like I had to figure out what I was going to fit into that little intro.
Oh, wow. Well, thank you. Every time people say those nice words, it always takes me back a little bit, because when I started it, I would never expect it that it would have such an effect on people and how much they would like it.
Yeah.
So, thank you.
Yeah, it's become quite the thing. So let's give our listeners a little background here for those people who aren't super familiar with your story. And correct me if I'm wrong on any of these facts. Did you started your dairy operation in Wisconsin around 2002? Is that right? 16.
That's correct.
16 years ago.
My husband, we both are from the Netherlands, grew up on a 60 cow dairy farm. In a country called the Netherlands, and Holland fits about, so the Netherlands and Holland, it's one same, two different names for one country.
Right. Always confusing to Americans, I feel like.
Exactly. I had once somebody asked me, well, how far is Holland from the Netherlands? And I'm like, just as far as the USA from America.
Well,
perfect
comparison.
But Holland fits about five times in the state of Wisconsin, only in the state of Wisconsin, and we have about almost 18 million people in Holland versus the 5 million here in Wisconsin.
Wow, that's a really interesting comparison, size-wise and density-wise. I hadn't thought of it in those terms before.
Yeah, so there's land is very expensive. So if you would pay, for an example, $4,000 an acre over here, in Holland, it's between $40,000 and $60,000 an acre. So very expensive.
Wow.
We have a lot of rules, and that was one of the main reasons why Rolf did not want to continue farming in America, in Holland.
Right.
And he visited different countries. He went to Canada, Sweden, Denmark, Germany, and also America.
Mm-hmm.
And because America did not have a quota system, you could start with a relative lower capital dairy farm. So that's what happened. He started together with his family, his parents and his brother, and they grew the farm from 350 cows into about 900 cows in about 10 years.
Wow.
And then in 2012, 2013, they split up the partnership, and then we started on this current location. We're right by Highway 29. And there was nothing, so we had to start from scratch again.
Yeah.
But this time we focused on education. We found out, and I did the same thing. Before I started making cheese, I would go to a store, pick up a piece of cheese, and I would think, wow, that's expensive.
Mm.
And now I go to the store, now knowing how much work it is to make cheese,
I go
to a store, pick up a piece of cheese, and think that's not enough.
Right.
You know?
It's a fraction of what the real value is there.
Yeah, indeed. And so I think it's very important that if you don't know, you don't know. So it's for us, it's very important that we can tell people and explain what we're doing. And you feel, you see the appreciation then afterwards too, like, oh, I didn't know, or that's interesting. And now I know why we pay a little bit more.
Right. It really enhances the experience of eating the cheese. You know, just when you know more about a product, I think this is why people get so geeky about food in general. It's like the more you know about it, the more the whole experience changes and just gets better and better, I feel like.
I totally agree. It's a bundle of joy, and it's not only you want good quality of food, but it's also a conversation piece. So if you have family or friends over and you have a piece of cheese and there is a story behind it and you can explain how it is made, that's the best there is. You know, you have
away
a good conversation to talk about, and you can discuss things, and that's what we should do a little bit more.
Right. And you mentioned that you're in this new location, which I loved, by the way. Listeners, just about a week and a half ago, I was driving on Highway 29 past Marika's new facility.
Yeah, you surprised me.
Yeah, I popped in and asked her, hey, come on the show. Let's chat on air next week. So it was really perfect timing. But I was really wowed by the facility. I hadn't been to the new one yet. And I did notice that you know, this idea that you're trying to educate people about how the cheese is made was really prevalent with your, you know, you had listeners. Marika has built the aging rooms so that there's glass walls that when you're there, even just buying cheese in their shop, you can see the wheels aging in there. And also even the brining tanks. I remember seeing them. That was really fun. I was there with a friend and I got to explain to her what those were. That was really a fun moment. And I was wondering, you know, in terms of that education piece, was that something that you always had in mind, or has that developed as one of your goals over time, you know, in seeing that people do, I think, sometimes expect cheese to cost a little less, or they think of it as expensive, and you know, has that been something that you've put more attention toward recently, or was that always part of what you wanted to do?
No, that really came along the adventure. When we started it, we started it because I was missing my Gouda from Holland.
Right, a great reason. It always reminds me of like other, you know, Zingerman's Creamery, Zingerman's Deli. I always love the story with them. They started by just wanting a really delicious Reuben sandwich. I feel like that's a great motivation in the beginning, right?
Yes, exactly. If you're craving for something, why don't you start making it yourself?
Right.
And I always would ask family and friends if they could bring along some cheese, but due to restriction by custom, they could bring less and less. So at some point it was like, can we bring still clothes or do we have to bring your cheese? So my cheese supply got less and less. And then on the other hand, because my husband was already in a partnership farming together with a different partner, I wanted to start my own business before I turned 30 and the clock was ticking.
Mm-hmm.
And then one night, and that's really how it happened, I was tossing in, because my first idea was to make children's furniture.
Oh, wow.
We
that's
have five
so different.
Children. We do, and we have five children. We do things very different, very quickly, I mean. but when I was looking for furniture for the babies, I really couldn't find something. And I thought this would be, I would like to draw my own furniture, the bed, the crib, the changing table, the dresser, So I draw everything. Then I went somewhere else because I'm not so good with a hammer and nail. So, but nobody wanted to make it for me. And then I wanted to, if somebody wanted to do Mickey Mouse theme, I was going to paint Mickey Mouse on it because I think I was pretty good in painting too. I have no idea, but I would have found out. But nobody wanted to build it for me. So I was tossing and turning that night, and then I heard a cow calving on the background because we were living on a farm. And I'm like, that's it. That's it. I think we should start making our own gouda. So I woke up and said, I think I know what we should do. I think we should start making gouda. And he just said, well, let's talk about that in the morning. And he turned around and fell asleep again. But my wheels were turning. And I came in contact with an organization called DBIC that helps people with a farmstead idea. They helped me with consultancy and a business plan and some marketing. So they were a great organization. But when we started, the idea was just to start a little bit of cheese. I had just about 10,000 euros in saving money. So my family-in-law built the creamery. I would rent it back. Buy the milk, and that's a little bit how we started. So the idea was just a little bit, to make a little bit, and education at that point was not high on the list. As we went along and we saw, well, we got requests for our local school to come down with their third graders or kindergarten kids, and just to see the kids to become aware of the calf and the cow and the enjoyment that they have by petting a calf. And then when you explain people the process, because we did have windows already in our little creamery at the time, people were like, oh, and you would see that they were willing to spend a little bit more after they were explained what it all takes to produce a piece of cheese, how often it, how many hands and how many people are helping to produce that cheese. And then, so it was mutual. It was the appreciation from the consumer and their enthusiasm that made me very enthusiastic. So we have a win-win situation here, I think. And plus, I think it becomes more and more important. And I know not all dairy farmers have the opportunity to do so, or but they also contribute in different ways. But I want to contribute to a more positive image by showing them what we're doing on our farm. And I think the love between the farmer and his cow should be showcased more. We need to showcase the love between between the dairy farmer and the cows, because you don't become a dairy farmer. It's more like a calling. And who becomes something that they don't like? And sometimes you see that on the news, or you see things coming by on social media, and and it's a lot of misunderstanding, because there are certain things that you do as a dairy farmer that are getting interpreted the wrong way. But we love our cows. You don't become an accountant if you hate numbers. Why would you devote your whole life when you hate a cow? So
it makes sense.
I think we should show how much love there is between the dairy farmer and his cow. So.
Yeah, and as a farmstead cheesemaker, you have that great opportunity where you have both sides of it. You have the dairy and then also the cows, and they're really right there. I mean, I peeked in, I poked my head in the barn when I stopped by just to see. But how many animals do you have right there next to the dairy?
We have about 400 animals on the farm.
Wow, that's that's a great...
And they all have a name, and we're always looking for more names, so people can always send us an email at info@marikagura.com.
Oh, great. So your customers can help with the naming. I love that.
Yes, we do that. And we love it. And we do tours in the summer months, June, July, and August. We have some great tour guides on our team. And we give tours at 9 o'clock in the morning and 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And then people can come and they can take a little peek behind the scene. We'll go through the barn. If people don't want to set up a tour or they don't have time, they can come in a walk-in base, and then they can just go in guided areas, secured areas, where they can see how we milk our cows and how we make turn the milk into a bundle of joy.
Yeah, totally. So I'm struck by that, those two motivating factors in the very beginning, how you really wanted to own your own business by age 30, and how you were passionate for the product. And I'm wondering, as a business owner, I'm curious to hear a little bit more about what it was that was driving you to want to own your own business. You know, I think that's also maybe in a way a calling. It's like some people are very entrepreneurial and others a little more risk averse. So what was that? Was it something you always wanted to do, or did that drive kind of increase when you were looking at moving to a new country?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm very impulsive, and I don't always think things very well through.
I think that's a good trait in an entrepreneur, because if you thought about it too much, you might not do it.
That is true. And, you know, it takes a lot of dreams to make one dream happen, too. Mm-hmm. So people shouldn't get discouraged about
right.
if something doesn't work. Not every dream has to succeed, though.
Right. It's such a good... It was so interesting to hear that you were actually pursuing this whole other idea of the children's furniture and kind of running into obstacles there before, you know, you stumbled into what you're doing now with so much success.
Yeah. And So I never got pushed by becoming, not like it's a calling that I wanted to make cheese, but I thought that would be the best idea at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And I completely fell in love with the industry.
Mm.
I cannot tell you how wonderful the people are in this industry and how helpful they have been.
Yeah.
When they welcomed me with open arms, and try to help each other.
Mm-hmm.
There's many ways, because everybody makes their own unique bundle of joy, again, their own products.
Yeah.
And we can consolidate, we can help each other with the marketing.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many things that you can do together.
Mm-hmm.
and move the product all over the United States and beyond. So I kind of fell in love with the cheese and the people that are involved in the food industry.
Yeah.
Do
you have
and
any?
And we won our first award 4 months into it. And,
oh, wow.
And that really helped us put our name on out there too.
So. Right. I didn't realize it happened that quickly. That's incredible.
Yeah, we were very, very fortunate.
Yeah. And for you, so it's pretty striking being in the shop right next to your cheesemaking dairy, or you know, in the same building. Yeah, there's so many ribbons, and it was really fun to see them all in person and kind of soak up like just the greatness that was displayed on the walls. It was like, oh my goodness, I've never seen a more decorated room. Aww. With these awards.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's really incredible. And I'm also curious, like, if that, you know, in terms of how you're thinking about your business and what you're trying to do, where it sounds like the awards were something you participated in right away. And is that something that you feel like as a company is one of your big goals, is to continue to compete in that area?
Yes. Mm. So how it happened is when we started, again, well, we thought to stay very little. I just wanted to be close. I wanted to start my own business and stay close to the children. Mm-hmm. And then Norm Munson from DBIC, from the organization that helped us, he called me and said, Marika, there's a competition coming up and you should enter.
Mm-hmm.
So we were only, there was Rolf, me, and Martha was our first team member.
Mm-hmm.
And we all entered our own wheel. Young Gouda, a cumin, and a fenugreek. And then the fenugreek that Rolf picked won a golden award at that competition.
I love that fenugreek, by the way. That cheese is so good. It's like maple syrup and I don't know. It's
and
like,
nutty.
Yeah, it's like roasted nuts with maple syrup. I can't, it's like nut. It's crazy.
And, you know, that one won so many awards, I couldn't even tell how many. I have no idea. It won so many awards. But that one won. But when Norm called and he was all excited, he says, Marika, I think you guys won a golden award. And he was totally excited. And I'm like, oh, okay. Oh, okay, that's great. And I hang up and I went with the two cups of coffee. I remember because we just had a cheese under the press.
Mm-hmm.
And it was there was some sun shining and we were drinking a cup of coffee. And then I said, oh, yeah, by the way, Norm just called. And he thinks that we've won something, you know. And now I'm a completely junkie. I'm like, I get nervous already.
Now I'm totally on the ball.
Like,
you would never, be distracted by the sunshine again while you're waiting for that phone call.
No, yeah.
Oh, I love it. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to have a short message from our cheese-loving supporters. Listeners, we'll be back in a few with more from Marika Penterman in Wisconsin.
Today's program was brought to you by Emmy Cheese, specialty cheese from Switzerland made with heart and passion. Since the early 1900s, Emmy has been a passionate supporter of farmers, cheesemakers, and family tradition. They believe in sustainable agriculture and respect for the people, land, and animals that make their business possible. Remaining dedicated to tradition, they strive to lead the industry in innovation, ensuring they bring you only the highest quality, best-tasting cheese from Switzerland. Emmy is best known for importing more than 80% of the Swiss Gruyere into the United States, but that's not to overshadow their other specialty cheeses, including Kaltbach Cave Age cheeses, Der Scharfer Max, Appenzeller, Tête de Moine, and traditional Emmentaler. For more information, visit emmyusa.com.
And we're back. I'm Elena Santigade. This is Cutting the Curd, and I'm here with Marika Penterman in Wisconsin. We were just talking about the many awards that Marika Gouda has won over the years. And Marika, I'd actually, during that short break, I was thinking I want to completely change gears and get really detailed here, because you've mentioned a couple times you have 5 kids, you've got this big family, you have so much, you've just grown the business, and I'm curious, what is your day like? How do you juggle everything?
I will tell you all our family secrets, but I just want to jump back one thing because I'm very proud of that.
Okay.
In 2013, we were nominated the best cheese in America.
Yes, this was huge.
With that, I actually won my, not won, but this is how I got my green card.
At
that point, our immigration lawyer said, well, Marika, I think we should see if we could qualify you for the extraordinary ability route.
Wow.
And he did. We applied for it and we got approved, and that's how we got our green card. So I don't have to hide in basements anymore. Isn't that nice? No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, well, these days, you never know.
Cheese brought me also my permanent visa.
That is incredible. And talk about something that, I mean, could you ever have predicted that cheese would have brought you, you know, permanent status here in the United States?
No, never, never. And it was the only way. We would have never been able to get it otherwise. Mm. So it's wonderful to get it that way.
Wow.
But going back to our 5 children and
and juggling it all. What is your day like? I'm a total, you know, daily workflow junkie. I always want to know what people do when they wake up. How do they organize themselves, especially high performing people? So I'm curious if you wouldn't mind even just talking us through a little bit of today. What did your life look like today?
The question, what I do at a day,
mm-hmm.
And the answer, because I have a hard time answering that, because sometimes I don't even know what happened. I know a lot of things happened, but a lot of things that I could not have projected when I got up.
Right.
So my answer is always whatever it takes.
Yeah.
So what did I do today? Whatever it takes.
Mm.
In the morning I got a very nice now. There was a time that I had to be early here, but
Christian,
one of my team members, is first here in the creamery.
Okay.
So I can stay with the kids, get the kids to school.
That's good.
And when they're to school, then Rolf comes home and we'll have a cup of coffee with our intern. We have an intern from Holland for 5 months too. We have a lot of people staying at our house.
Yeah.
We have one coming in March again. And then we go to the creamery, and I do some stuff at home first,
mm-hmm.
and then we go to the creamery. I travel a lot, so I just came back from Boise. Where we just started. Boise Co-op is carrying us in their supermarkets,
mm-hmm.
And then tomorrow I'm leaving tomorrow I'm leaving. I'm in a panel Wednesday morning in Green Bay. My day is all over the place. Today, after we hang up, I'm going to have to... Dutch people that contacted me yesterday that would like to talk about how to market a dairy product.
Mm.
So they're going to stay for the night. And then, tomorrow I will try to get my laundry done so the kids have some clean clothes. My kids are very good because there was a time that they would say, Mom, when is the pants clean? And I think it started when the oldest were, so about 4 years.
Yeah.
Like, Mom will clean it. Mom will clean it. At some point, they just went, Mom, could you just explain me the washer?
Oh, amazing. That's
a
dream.
I said I would do it. Yeah, but we don't want to wait like 3-4 days. We would like to have it washed for tomorrow. So could you please explain that washer to us?
Oh, my
so,
goodness.
So they help a lot.
And how old are they?
Yeah, they're 14. They're going to be 15 in February.
Wow.
They're twin girls, identical twin girls.
Mm-hmm.
And, one is really a farmer, and the other one is probably going to be a chef. She likes to cook.
Ah.
So, but it's Sunday morning at 6. They get up to help feed calves, and and they have a job now already at our local supermarket, so they're really good girls. And then we have a boy, Dean. I'm telling you, if I ask him to vacuum the house, the world collapses a little bit. but he wants to be a pilot. And then Fenna, she thinks about being a lawyer. And the youngest, yeah, he could be anything. I just hope I don't have to visit him in prison. But no, he's a great kid too. Well, but they all have their own personalities. But it's hard to carry all the hats. And you always feel like... you're slacking something at home with the kids or at work.
Yeah.
So it is a struggle.
Is there anything that you do for yourself that you squeeze out on the sides, or how do you like ground yourself, would you say?
That's something I try to relook at it. You try to combine things. So tomorrow, I'm going to Green Bay early, and then I'm going to take my best friend with me. We'll make a nice trip out of it.
That's fun.
And then it's pleasure and work a little bit together. But
yeah,
you have to do those kind of things. It's a struggle. I have not found out the right answer to how to do it all. But I do notice that sometimes when you're working, and my husband is a really hardworking person, it sometimes creates room for kids to develop and take responsibility for things.
Yeah,
and,
it's a perfect example.
And then when you're home, you try to take time with the kids.
Right.
And we on purpose did not build a house by the farm. Because we're open from 7 till 7. Now we have winter hours a little bit, but normally during the high season and stuff, we're open from 7 till 7.
Wow.
So we decided not to live on the farm so that when we would be at home, we would be at home.
Yeah.
And
you
not
could really
still have
unplug.
One foot at the farm. Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Right. So. That's a smart move. I always think it's good to have a little distance and also to clear your head a little bit, to ready yourself for the next thing.
Yes, because you do need, if you are constantly, and I tell people too, I love making cheese, but by standing by the cheese vat 24/7, it's not giving us room for me to think or think what's going to be the next step. Because marketing is a big thing too, and I like the contact with the cheesemongers and the consumers, and I love to go out there and talk with people and see what we can do better. If people have new ideas for flavors, I'm very grateful for my team because they make it all happen. We have very independable go-getters on our team, and that helped us grow too.
Yeah, that's great. How many people are on your team at this point?
We have about 35 people. So
wow.
We started about 12 years ago with one person, and we have about 35 people right now.
Wow.
Plus the 400 Gouda ladies in the barn. So it's a big team.
We can't forget about them.
No, absolutely not. No.
Wow, that's really fun. And it sounds like, it does sound like your days are all can be very different. Like, yeah, like you're not working that sort of cheesemaker's just day in, day out in the vat schedule, which I agree. I think it's good to be close to the, you know, have some closeness with the market and with the front lines of the people selling the cheese too. It's so important to get that feedback.
It's on both sides. Yeah, right. you have to be by the cheese, but you also want to hear the feedback and help sell it. And mm-hmm. Yeah, it's there are a lot of hats to wear, and fortunate I do have a lot of good people that I can count on, and everything will still keep on rolling.
Right. The cheese gets made every day.
Yes.
And then there's also, you know, whenever we have someone from Wisconsin on air, it's always a fun chance to talk about the uniqueness of the dairy farmers of Wisconsin and how this, you know, that statewide marketing body really enables everybody to pool their efforts in a way. And I know that there was a recent commercial was launched by the Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin. Listeners, we'll post a link to it on the show page. But in the commercial, just to paint the picture for everyone, there's this, it's a commercial promoting the cheesemakers of Wisconsin. And it's completely idyllic, this gorgeous Wisconsin countryside. Mm-hmm. And you see a big empty wooden table in the middle of the countryside, and all of the Wisconsin cheesemakers bring their cheese and add it to this table. Yeah. And it's an amazing visual, and it looked like so much fun to film. It looked like you were all having a blast.
Yeah, kind of a little reunion. So
right.
It was just perfect.
It's such a happy community. Just, you know, I've met a number of the people who are standing there in the commercial, and it's like, oh, wow, what an amazing group of people. Did you, where was the commercial shot?
Oh, that's a good question. It's close by Verona area, Beloit.
Ah, okay.
Beloit?
Okay.
Yeah, it was lower there, and it was a beautiful, it was not such a beautiful day, so it's amazing what they can do, because it was raining, and we had to wait a little bit, but that's perfect, because we were all sitting, having a beer,
nice.
Eating some good food,
good.
In the barn there,
mm-hmm.
and when the weather cleared out, everybody was like, yeah, let's go, you know. And
just ran out.
Yeah, it was good to see everybody again, and... Yeah, and I think it's a great promotion of our product, because mm-hmm. Wisconsin truly have. There are other states that claim that they have happy cows. Well, if they have happy cows, we have extremely happy cows.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, extremely happy cows make great milk that turns in even better cheese, better products, you know. So
totally.
It's a really good way in showcasing all the beautiful things we have here in Wisconsin.
Yeah, it's really fun. Again, listeners, I'll put in the show notes. And full disclosure, I work with the Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin as well, and I agree. It's like such a joy to promote just really happy cows. That's what it comes down to a lot, and it's just fun to be able to share that, especially in that video, with everyone.
And I think something to be proud of is too the quality again. There's a like our Goudas, but there are a lot of old generation recipes, cheeses that we make. Mm. And you see now in competition, going back to this competition that where the World Cheese Competition, they have international mm-hmm. international judges that will judge your cheeses, and
right.
our cheeses do in Wisconsin was. Very high scored.
Mm-hmm.
So with the quality that we have here in Wisconsin, we really can almost outdo Europe, I would think.
It's
so,
pretty amazing.
The category in Gouda, for an example, the top three were all Goudas from Wisconsin, and it was judged by a Dutch judge. So that says something about the quality that we have here
totally.
In Wisconsin.
Totally. Yeah. And I also think it's pretty unusual for, and now I really want on air to mess up saying this word, because I'm excited to have you tell me how it's really pronounced. But how do I, okay, how badly am I saying it? Here it goes. Borenkäse? Is that how I would say it?
You do pretty well.
Pretty
we
well.
We say Borenkäse. Borenkäse.
Borenkäse.
Yeah, we roll the we roll the R a little bit more.
Ooh, I like the roll. Borenkäse.
And that's called farmstead cheese.
Yeah, and I feel like it's pretty unusual, or at least to me it feels unusual to see a real farmstead raw milk Gouda here in the States.
Yeah, I think we're one of the rare, if not the only Gouda.
Yeah.
But there are not many people that have a farmstead, that make farmstead cheeses anymore.
Right.
And that means it's not family farms, it's we're a family farm also, but mm-hmm. it's a farmstead. So the cows get milked right there on the spot where the cheese has been made.
Right.
Crave Brothers is another example from that.
Mm-hmm.
Andy Hatch is another example.
Right.
So that means that the milk produced is right there where you also manufacture it. The cows are right there.
Right.
And that, I think, one of the creamy flavor, clean creamy flavor, I give credit to our cows. It's because the cows came straight from the milk. The milk came straight from the cows into our cheese vat, and then we make it within 5 hours into cheese.
Wow. Yeah, it really doesn't get any fresher than that.
No, I don't think so. So,
that's so great.
And that's why we are feel comfortable to make a raw milk farmstead cheese, because we're right there where everything happens. The circle is complete, and then we get to talk with the consumers right here on the retail farm that we had. We had about 160,000 people last year that came and toured the facility and sampled the cheeses. And I always say we produce under the eye of the consumer, and it keeps us sharp too.
Yeah, that's great, and it's such an inspirational, like proactive move to do that. You know, some businesses would be so secretive or just want to keep things to themselves, but to say, you know, it's not even about pressure from the market. It's just that you want to be open and you want people to see what you're doing and learn about it. It's just, I love it. It's the right way.
Yes, and another thing I'm very proud of is I'm not a feminist at all, but we have three licensed female cheesemakers, me being one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think between all the handsome cheesemakers, it's just nice that there are some female cheesemakers there out there too.
Absolutely.
Because it becomes more and more a teamwork inside and outside the house. So I'm very proud of that too.
That's great. Yeah, I was looking at some photos that looked like you had a number of women on your team, so I thought that was really awesome to see.
Yeah, we have a lot of ladies over here, so the poor guys, but they seem to handle themselves.
Yeah, keep them on their toes.
yeah.
Oh, wow. Well, Marika, thank you so much for taking time to chat with me on air.
Yeah, not a problem. Just one little fun fact about Gouda.
Oh, let's hear it.
I always said Gouda was discovered in a little town called Gouda, like Colby was discovered in Colby.
Mm-hmm.
Not true. There's not 1 pound of Gouda produced in a town called Gouda in Holland. But around there were farmsteads, Boerenkaas producers that will bring their cheese to the market in Gouda.
Ah.
And if you ever have a chance to travel to Holland, it's really beautiful to see, because every Friday they still have that traditional way of marketing the cheese there on the
uh-huh.
market. And they come with the horses and they throw off the cheese wheels.
Wow.
So it's beautiful to see. And so that's why it's called Gouda.
Good fact. This is great trivia here as people.
Okay, then I have two short ones. I don't know if I
Oh,
still
this
have
is
time.
Perfect. Of course. Yes,
yeah?
Let's hear it. I love good cheese trivia.
Another one is why does Gouda have a wheel? Well, it has a wheel shape, but why does it have a wheel shape?
Mm-hmm.
Well, in the earlier days when they would transport the cheese from one harbor to the other, instead of walking down the plank, they would roll the cheese.
Mm-hmm.
So it has transportation purposes. And then the other thing is, that's why Rolf and I always say we feel very home here, because here in Wisconsin we are called cheeseheads, but in Holland we are called cheeseheads too.
Uh-huh.
And the reason for that is that in the earlier days, well, the cheese would put, when it comes out of the cheese fat, it would be put in a mold, like those round Kodolfa molds, plastic molds. They used to be made out of wood. And when the Dutch would go to war, they would use those wooden molds as a helmet. So I'm not sure how bulletproof they are, but still a lot of Dutchies survived, apparently.
Yeah, maybe they instilled the soldiers with a certain amount of passion and,
yes,
you know. Oh, I love it.
So, but that's why, because we had those cheesy molds on our heads. So
you felt right at home. Well,
yes,
I love it. Any others? Those were so great. This is
well those are for now. So okay, by our next conversation,
okay,
maybe,
good,
Elena, I will
good.
Come up with a couple more.
All right, listeners, stay tuned for that. Well, Marika, thanks again so much, and good luck with your travels and the end
you.
Of the year.
And thank you for having me on the show.
Of
and
course.
Thank you, listeners, for listening to my story. And stop in at Tharp or visit us on the website, marikaguda.com.
Great. Listeners, if you aren't on your way already, I highly suggest going out and getting yourself a piece of Marika Guda. Thanks so much for tuning in, everyone. And don't miss our last show of the season next week. Diane, Aaron, and I will all be together in studio for a special host show as we celebrate the end of a great year in cheese.
Next year, Heritage Radio Network is turning 10. For the last decade, we've been committed to bringing listeners around the world the very best in food radio, for free. Our small staff and incredible network of hosts work hard so that listeners can tune in each week to hear the important conversations in food policy, stay on the cutting edge of cocktail culture, and hear the latest updates in food tech. But there is no HRN without the support of listeners like you. Become a member of Heritage Radio Network today and help HRN get a strong start to our second decade. Choose from exclusive member gifts and stay in the loop on discounts to upcoming events. There's no better time to show your support. Go to heritageradionetwork.org/donate and wish HRN a happy birthday.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.